This episode of Long Roads is with Brett Williams. Brett is an actor who recently had a role in Ridley Scott's new sci-fi TV show on HBO Max. It's called Raised by Wolves. His latest off-screen project has been a couple of years in the making, and it is called Albany Watch Company. They just released their debut, The Ama Diver, on Kickstarter and reached their goal within 1 hour. In this conversation, Brett and I talk about being an actor, artist, and creative. We discuss the history of Ama Divers from Japan, and we also talk about what he's been doing with Albany for the past 2 years before launching this past week. We talk about how we take criticism on our designs from the watch community, as well as what comes next for Albany. This one was especially fun, so enjoy.
Shot. There you go. Earl Grey tea nice. With Bain's South African whiskey.
Oh, so it's a spiked tea. Nice.
Yeah, it's a spiked
tea. That's the way to do it, man.
I think I need it. Yeah.
I'm drinking a green shake, actually, so there's no booze in here. I had my coffee already, so it's literally just purified water with, it's called Nested Greens. There's a bunch of healthy green shit in there.
Oh, so, wow.
Cheers.
Nice. Cheers, man. Cheers. Nice to see your face.
Yeah, nice to see your face too, man. Like, I know what you look like, obviously, from the movies and TV shows that you're in, but it's good to, like, talk face-to-face, screen-to-screen, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely, man.
So earlier, I just want to point out something that you said earlier. You're washing the day off. And I found it funny that you said that because you actually encompass Albany, what Albany stands for. You kind of channel the essence of Albany in your day-to-day life. And so what I mean by that is Albany, it says it on your Kickstarter that it's inspired by lesser-known adventures. So I just have to ask, what did you get up to today?
I can tell you what I wished I got up to. I got up to a lot of work. Because running the Kickstarter, you know, it spikes very quickly, and then it sort of plateaus and you've got to keep on with that. But I drove past to my partner's house. He lives on the coast, which is like 10 minutes away from me, and everybody was in the water surfing. And then when I drove home, everybody was in the water surfing. So I was just like, I was really bummed. But for the first time in like 5 weeks, I've got the weekend off. So I'm going surfing tomorrow and I'm going surfing on Sunday. And it's great because it's like, depending where I go, where I'm going tomorrow is like an hour's drive. I go up over the mountain pass and then way down onto the Atlantic Ocean. And that's where a friend of mine lives and we surf out there. And then on Sunday, I'm going to him again. And then there's a 40-minute walk to a place called, I think it's Noordhoek, which is like North Hook or something, but it's a very, very long stretch of beach and there's no one there. So you walk for like 40 minutes and then the waves are intense and the water is freezing cold and hopefully there are no sharks. So yeah.
Have you always been a surfer since you were a kid?
I was a skater. So I surf, but I'm a skater at heart, you know?
You grew up in Cape Town where you're at now, or were you elsewhere when you were younger?
No, I grew up in Cape Town. So I grew up during apartheid, which was akin to being in like Soviet Russia in a way, which is weird because the government was anti-communist, but it's that same deeply oppressive government controlling space. So, you know, we grew up and we were just skaters, skater punks, a whole lot of us. And we were hated at school and it wasn't cool like I suppose in the States. But I grew up here and then I went to acting school in Australia, in Sydney.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. How long were you there for before you went back to South Africa?
Stayed there for 3 years. I studied for 2 years, but I stayed for three. And then I came back to Cape Town for three more years. And then I went back for 3 years with my son. And then I came back here.
Yeah, because I know you have a dual citizenship. You also have an Australian passport. How did that happen? Where along the line did that occur?
So the whole the whole Albany brand name actually comes from my dad's birthplace. That's where he was born, and he lived there until he was in his 20s. And I don't know if you ever saw the Camel adverts, the Camel cigarette ads, where they used to have these Camel cigarette ads in the 80s and whatever, and it was always this like dude on a boat on the Amazon River, and he's alone, and weeds get tangled up in his propeller, and there are crocodiles and stuff like that, but he dives into the water anyway with his knife between his teeth kind of thing, and cuts the reeds from the propeller, gets in and putters off and smokes a Camel. And my friends used to call my dad the Camel Man, because that's the kind of guy he is. He's like this like do or die kind of guy, and he had like a really kind of like fun adventure, not fun, I mean he grew up in rough circumstances, but he was super adventurous when he grew up in Albany, and it was a small town, and it was a whaling station. Actually, they closed it down, thank God, but like his best friend's father was the captain on one of the boats, and his friend's father had his leg ripped off because he got his leg caught in the coils of the harpoon rope when they fired the harpoon, which is comic, I suppose. But you know, yeah, I know.
So I just want to be clear, this is Albany, Australia, right? Not Albany,
Albany, Australia.
Okay, whereabout is that?
It's a small town on the west coast of Australia, just up from Perth. But I've been there, but it was quite a like a rough place, and it was, I suppose, if you've ever seen Mad Max, that's what Australia was like. It was just a crazy, you know, people were just like doing crazy stuff. So, So he kind of instilled that in me, and also growing up in South Africa, at the time we got up to like all kinds of like crazy stuff. So, you know, it's a very outdoorsy place. You know, people trail run, people mountain bike everywhere. There's surfing. There's like it's extremely outdoorsy. I love surfing. I mean, I love getting in the water. And about a month and a half ago, a shark kind of like cruised past us, and I love that stuff. Oof. Yeah, I actually saw it twice, but. It cruised behind. I was in the water with a guy, and he was surfing my board, and I was surfing his. And he was like lying in the water, taking the leash off. And I was like, "Oh man, did you see the shark?" And he was like, "What shark?" And then the fin just like appeared behind him, like cruising out into the ocean. And I was like, "That shark."
So just for the listeners that aren't aware, I want to just give some background on who you are, because we kind of are alluding to different parts of what make you who you are. So just full name, day job, what you do, cool. Background, anything that you think is important.
Sure. My name is Brett Williams. I'm the founder of Albany Watches. I'm a professional actor. That's usually my day job until COVID hit. I live in Cape Town, South Africa, and my roots are kind of in South Africa and Australia. Yeah. And we've just launched on Kickstarter. So I'm very stoked. I'm really thankful for the support from the community. It's great.
Now, you've actually been working on Albany Watches for quite a while. I remember seeing on Facebook probably over a year, maybe 2 years ago, when you first came onto the scene, but it's taken quite a while for you to bring something to market. Is there any particular reason why it took this long, and any specific difficulties that you had in getting this product done?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I started, I didn't really know the microbrand scene that well. And I'd done a design. I didn't know how to go into production, but I shared my designs. And then I found a company that would produce my watch at an exorbitant fee. And then through Kyle Ship from Stratton, he put me onto another company, and I got some prototypes from them. And then I'm with a manufacturer now who I have a really good relationship with, but it took a really long time because, especially for Kickstarter, as a South African, I'm not eligible to go onto Kickstarter. Luckily, my partner is a US citizen. I've known him for a long time. He loves the brand, but it's a long process. It's a real learning process. Some people do it really quickly. I wanted to make sure that the quality was up to my standards, because I didn't want to put something out there that was subpar. You know, I think, you know, your integrity goes a long way in, especially in the microbrand scene, because it's so, community focused.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really need to like reach out to people and talk to people. And that's, for me, that's what I love about it. You know, yeah. I love that it's almost like a collaborative effort in launching a brand, especially on the Facebook groups and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not even just amongst the brands that are collaborative, but even the consumers, the actual customers in the market. And, you know, some of the people that run platforms like Worn and Wound or any of the Facebook groups that you're mentioning, it really does feel collaborative. And there's a lot of support that comes from all different angles in the industry.
Absolutely. I think like, especially like the podcast scene is so great. Worn and Wound has been really good. I reached out to them a long time ago, and I follow both Zachs on Instagram. They've been really amazing. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it takes time to kind of introduce yourself to people, you know, and it's instead of just like blasting emails out and going, "Hey, I'm a brand owner." And it's nice to cultivate those relationships. And that's what's so great about the microbrand scene, is that you do forge these kind of friendships and relationships. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I reached out to you ages ago, and then my friend Ty Coast from Coast Watches in Denmark kind of was like, "Hey, I'm talking to Wes." And I was like, "Oh, I spoke to Wes ages ago." And, you know, we got to talking again. And it's very, very cool, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I love seeing, especially in an industry like the watch industry that's been, you know, smoke and mirrors for decades. You know, having the micro brand scene kind of pop up out of nowhere, it's kind of hard to hide behind a brand, and it's hard for us as brand owners to just put the watch out there and kind of try to be anonymous and hide behind the curtain. You know, if you launch a brand, everyone's going to know who you are. They're going to know if you do something good. They're going to know if you do something bad. And that kind of inherent transparency in the industry makes me feel very comfortable as a consumer and a watch fan buying from new companies.
Absolutely. I think, I totally agree with you. I mean, I really like it because, you know, I'm all about like honesty and transparency. And I think that's a double-edged sword as well. You know, when you're a brand owner and compared to a consumer, because as a consumer, you don't have the knowledge of what goes into creating a brand or what goes into creating a watch. So, you know, I've had people say like, there's no date window. It's too expensive because there's no date window. And it's like, well, the movement is the same price, whether it's got a date or not, you know. But you can't kind of, you know, people don't know. So it's a fine balance. And you don't, you know, I mean, I think to create an affordable watch is very, very difficult. I really do think it's difficult. But it's sort of the staple of the microbrand world. You don't want to rip people off. You know, that's not what it's about. It's about creating enthusiasts, I think.
Yeah, you mentioned something very interesting about the whole, movement being the same price, whether it has the date or the no date. So that would be, in your case, the Miyota 9015 versus the 9039 is the one you're using, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And we're in a similar position now because we're... actually, you know what? Quick wrist check. I'm wearing the Sector Field Smoke variant.
I just had a shower, so I don't have my watch on. But I'm actually... Sorry, dude. I know. Okay, so I'm actually wearing... I'm wearing an old prototype that I took the bezel off because I want to create a field watch. So that's my...
Oh, that's a good look, man. I
see that.
Yeah, you sent me a picture of that. I actually really like it without the bezel, too.
It's really nice. Yeah. And we want to, the thing is, we want to retain the shape of the watch. I know it's a skin diver shape, but I think we can tweak it slightly so that it's got a familiarity with the brand. I love it, man. And I'm usually a NATO guy. I wear NATOs like all the time. I love the bracelet, but it's because I surf. I just wear the NATO. I wear it. It gets wet. You know, I go home. It dries on my arm. It's really, user friendly.
Yeah.
But I'm wearing the leather strap, and it's just like so comfortable.
So this was the so prototype good. Before your current manufacturer, right?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I love the problem is that all my I've got one watch left. All my prototypes are up for review. So I always wear my standard black armor diver with the bezel. And I just sort of put this on like this week just to try something new, just because I wanted to check how it looks without the bezel and get comfortable with it. It's the same case shape. The movement is different. I've got a Miyota in the new model. I tried this with a Sellita, but it just doesn't make sense to me. It's a Japanese inspired watch. Why would you put a Swiss movement in it? You know?
Yeah. So like I was mentioning earlier before the wrist check, on this new batch of Sectors, it's the first time we're using a new loom formulation, and it's called, it's a bit of a mouthful, but it's called C1X1BL, and it's based off of the original C1 formula, which has a really bad reputation in the watch industry, the enthusiast crowd at least, and for good reason. You know, I think Damasco still uses it for certain models, I think Zin as well, but for the most part, brands don't use it anymore because it doesn't glow quite as bright. So RC Tritech, the company that makes all the Superluminova, decided to revamp this formula. But this is a brand new formulation. Right now, I think only Chris Ward uses it, and oh my God, dude, it's beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like magic,
that sector,
man.
Is so beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
But I got to say, the Contrail 2 is like my favorite. I just love it. It's like, it's totally my kind of watch.
Yeah.
I really dig it. I know it's got BWG9 A grade.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. Yes, it does. Yeah. So that's the last watch we're using that we're making that uses BGW. From now on, I think we're going to be using this new C1 X1 stuff. Just because it's mind-blowing.
So is the BL a blue tinge?
Yeah, so it stands for blue.
Is that
but
what
they,
it stands for?
We also have the green variant, and we have a like a Fotina variant just, you know, sitting by in case we want to experiment and prototype.
Yeah, that's cool. I love that kind of like Fotina stuff.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah, it's one of those things. A lot of enthusiasts hate it, but we don't want to use it as Fotina. We want to use it as like color. Like, so for Gilt, for example, if we're making a Gilt watch, then we'd use that instead of the BL stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I don't know if I know the whole story, but it seems like the micro brand scene seems to be getting off a little lighter than the big brands during COVID. You know, I know from people in the industry that like people have been laid off on the big brands and stuff like that. But I hope that's the case. I hope the microbrand scene is doing well. You know, and I'm starting to see that microbrands are starting to influence big brands, or big brands are paying attention to what the microbrand scene is doing. Definitely.
Oh yeah, as far as design goes, for sure. You see companies like Tag doing a lot of things that micro brands have been doing for a few years now.
Yeah, totally.
But
brands
for sure,
like Zealous.
Yeah, brands like Zealous especially. I wouldn't even consider them a micro brand anymore, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
They'd be in like the Chris Ward realm of watches, kind of in between a micro and a mainstream.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was chatting to you yesterday, and I was just like, when I was at work, I was like, okay, we've launched Kickstarter. I've got to see what Yema is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you pronounce it? Yema?
Yema, yeah.
Yema, I was just like, it blew my mind. I couldn't keep up with the numbers.
Yeah, over
$1 million.
They did
so well yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, like within 30 minutes.
Yeah. I mean,
that was insane.
I like their stuff. I like what they're doing. I don't understand why they're still using Kickstarter, though. They've been around for so long.
Yeah, I think they're a restart, right? They're because they're a vintage brand that kind of died out.
Yeah, they bought the trademark again, and I think they're doing some pretty innovative stuff. But like, there's really no reason to continue doing Kickstarter when you've been, even since the relaunch of the brand. You know, it's been a few years now, but I don't know.
They're on the third Kickstarter now.
Yeah. It seems like they continue to use it. I'm not really sure what the idea behind that is, but That's kind of a good segue, though, because I wanted to talk a bit about Kickstarter and the difficulties that you were having. A lot of brands use Kickstarter more as a marketing platform than anything. But for you, this is your very first watch, and this really was supposed to kickstart your entire company. Why did you have so much issue with it? What was the big hump that you had to get over?
So we launched in December as a pre-order. As you know, I had two partners, and we launched, and it just didn't work. It wasn't working, and I wasn't happy with what was going on with the partners, and COVID hit, and I decided to refund everybody because we couldn't be sure what was happening with the industry, and also, you know, the fear was that everyone was going to lose their jobs and stuff, and I didn't feel comfortable with holding on to people's money, you know, if COVID was hitting. So I refunded everyone, and I put the company on hold, and then I decided through talking to my current partner, he was like, dude, you just got to launch it. You've just got to like go on Kickstarter and just do it. Give it one more push. And I thought about it, and then I did, and I got everything ready. And it's so difficult as a South African because you're not eligible to launch on Kickstarter. So I got a US bank account. I registered my company in the States, and then they wanted social security numbers, which I couldn't provide. And luckily, you know, he and I discussed it, and he came on board, and we've worked for about a month before our Kickstarter, and we did all our marketing and PR in the last like week before Kickstarter. We're really surprised. We just wanted to like launch it and start the brand. It's not about making pots of money. It's about brand awareness. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot of work. I mean, I think people think it's like, oh, you make a watch and you do a couple of photographs and then you put it out. It's really a lot of work to do. You know, it's not easy. And a lot of people fail at it, I think. So we were really lucky to hit our target in under an hour.
Yeah.
So I was really happy with that.
Yeah, you're right, you know? When you say a lot of people can't do it. A lot of people have failed. And that's not actually the part of the narrative that bothers me the most. The part that bothers me the most is when after they launch a watch, they sell a watch and they do all the shipping, they look at that process of that first watch and they're like, oh my God, this is too much of a headache. And they never do another thing again after that. But I've got to say, like, the way I've watched you deal with all of these issues, you know, coming left and right with COVID and within with Kickstarter and then with the issue with your previous business partners, you've dealt with it with such grace and integrity. So I don't have that same fear with Albany. I know that this is not going to be the AMA diver and then we're never going to hear from you again. I know that you have the grit that it takes and the determination to keep this thing going.
Thanks, man. Yeah, for me, it's not a one watch thing. I really love the creative process. So I've got all these like crazy, crazy, you know, lesser known adventure stories that I just want to put into watches. I mean, you know, the field watch is going to be based on a Norwegian explorer who, you know, he fought the Nazis. He was trapped in an ice cave, and I mean, this sounds really terrible, but he was trapped in an ice cave and he dug his way out with his own frozen waist. He fashioned a knife. I mean, it's insane. So, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, he lost a leg.
Wow.
And he was the first person to win the $64,000 question on the $64,000 question game show in the 60s, I think it was. He won an Oscar for best screenplay. Like, amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. I'd have to ask Ty exactly how to pronounce his name because he's Danish. But I think his name is I think it pronounced Peter Freuchen. He was like a 6'7" giant of a man. Really amazing, amazing man. He, you know, just incredible. So we want to, you know, I'm really inspired by him, and we want to sort of, you know, dedicate a field watch to his spirit of adventure. Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. Can you send me his name later? I want to read into this.
Oh, totally. I know it sounds so insane, right? But he is like one of those people that you don't really hear about, but he is like incredible. So I'll definitely send that to you. But yeah, I just want to say that like producing a watch, you know, if I fail at producing a watch, or I don't, or I cheat people, or I don't deliver on every, or anything like that, that's my name, you know? And personally for me, I can't live with that, you know, that kind of, I wouldn't want to live with like my name being mud. So it's very important to me that we get it right and we get the quality right and we give people not what they want, but we want to surprise people when they get their product. We want them to be blown away.
Well, that's why I bring it up. You know, I mean, when you launched your watch on Kickstarter, you know, how many of those people that backed you knew about the prototypes before? You know what I mean? Like, and chances are on your next one, and as the company grows, people are going to slowly start to forget how many iterations you went through before you, even your very first watch. So I want to make sure I bring attention to that, because that really shows your dedication to what this watch and brand is supposed to be.
Yeah, it's taken a long time.
So I'm really excited for the upcoming Field Watch that you're currently working on the design, or you're in production or manufacturing, yeah, or what stage are you at?
Currently I was designing a GMT, but I don't want to release a GMT just yet because for a number of reasons. I think the Field Watch is more affordable. You know, we don't want to jump from, you know, a Miyota caliber watch to like a Swiss GMT. I just think from a business perspective and also from a customer base perspective, it's too extreme. So we want to do the Field Watch first. So I'm in the design process. I think as soon as we finish the Kickstarter, I'd like to get into prototyping, you know, and get that ball rolling.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah, I'm really excited to see what that one looks like. But let's talk about the AMA Diver for now, since that's kind of what you're working on.
Cool.
What can you tell me about the history of AMA Divers and the inspiration behind the watch, and anything cool about it that you want to bring attention to?
Yeah, man. So the AMA, for anyone who doesn't know, the AMA Divers are the traditional pearl divers of Japan. I mean, they're called pearl divers, but their daily routine was gathering food from the ocean, the coasts of Japan. So they would dive twice a day, and they were only women. And they dove for like 2 minutes at a time down to 30 feet. It's a long time to be underwater. And there's a really beautiful part of it is when they would surface, they would exhale. They would have this special kind of exhalation call. And my pronunciation is probably totally off, but I think it's Isobui. And it's a really beautiful part of the story. So they dove naked for like 2,000 years. It's a very old tradition. They passed their tradition down from mother to daughter, diving into their 80s. And it's only, I think it's only since the 50s or mid-50s they started wearing, you know, since the advent of neoprene, but they started wearing kind of stuff because I think the Europeans went over to Japan after the war and they were a bit shocked that people were diving naked. And the reason they dove naked was because their skin dried faster than cloth would. Yeah, it's such a beautiful story, and it's pretty sad because the tradition's dying out now, obviously, with modernization and things like that. Yeah. So I was designing the watch, and I don't know which came first, the story or the watch, but it kind of influenced, you know, it was quite an organic process. The hands of the watch, I came up with the harpoon second hand, which I haven't seen before. It's a one-sided second hand, which looks like a harpoon. It's very difficult to design a watch based on your inspiration because pretty much everything has been done. But I designed the hands to sort of replicate tools that people would use when diving. We went with a black pearl face, black pearl dial, because it's a pearl diver. You know, it's a skin diver case. It's a 300 meter dive watch. There's sapphire crystal on the bezel insert and the single dome. And I've got to say, the single dome is amazing. It's super legible. It's really beautiful. So everything from the bezel to the crown is inspired by the kind of rough coastline of Japan. You know, that kind of like, it's got like black rocks and everything is quite organic looking, I think. Yeah,
it really is. So you do a fair bit of traveling. Your business partner you actually met while you were traveling, right? Your current business partner, sorry.
So, oh yeah, it's so weird. So I was doing a commercial in Johannesburg, which is upcountry. And I was sitting on the plane flying up, and there was a spare seat between us. And this dude is just like sitting there, and he's like, he looks over and he's like, "Oh, is that an Albany watch?" And I was like, "I haven't even released it." I was like, "Yeah, how'd you know?" And he was like, "Oh, my friend sent it to me, and I used to work for JLC," and he showed me his like amazing Reverso. And we got to talking, and then he was like, "Here's my card. Let's keep in touch." And that was about like 2 and a bit years ago. And so we've been keeping in touch, and I've asked him questions and stuff. And I can't tell you. I mean, he wants to be behind the scenes. He's always joking that he's like the co-pilot. But I couldn't do what we've done without him. He's fucking incredible. He's like amazing. So I'm really stoked.
And he's based in New York, right?
He's based in New York. He's actually here at the moment. He left New York because of COVID. They got the last flight out of New York. They were like, "Look, it's all going to lock down. Let's go back to South Africa, and we'll be there for a month, and then we'll come back to New York." And he's still here. He's you know, he's got all his stuff in storage there, and he's paying rent on his flat. But he's he's here, and it's like the stars aligned. Everything became, there was so much synchronicity, and it's just kind of, you know, like, you know, like notice. It's like, you know, so yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it definitely is helpful to have a partner. And I can't stress that enough. Like, I feel like over the past 3-4 years, I've gotten a little bit more of the attention from the crowd, and people kind of associate me and my name and my face with the Notice brand. But the fact of the matter is, Cullen does like 90% of the work. I just kind of dance around in the background and make a bunch of noise. But
yeah, I know how that feels. Yeah.
In all seriousness though, like having a business partner to take a load off whenever you need a break. Cause frankly, this job is, you know, it's still a job, and having to be plugged in all the time with customer service, and, you know, you don't have any watches out yet, but you're going to soon find out that people just, even if there's no issue with the watch, people want to talk to you about the creation and talk to you about the experiences that they're forming with this, all the memories and all that stuff. You know, when they travel to a remote part of the world, you're probably going to get a bunch of messages with wrist shots and saying, "Dude, this thing is fucking awesome. And I'm going to keep this forever because of the memories that I'm forming with it." You know what I mean? And it is a lot for one person.
Yeah, I know, man. I've noticed, like, you know, I live on my phone now. I wake up, I check. I go to sleep checking my phone, because I don't want to. It's very difficult, you know, especially if you're, you know, he's the guy who will like repost the Instagram stories and do all the brand strategy and stuff like that. You know, I'm a creative person. I've never been like, you know, I'm an artist, and, you know, I paint and stuff like that. And I'm an actor, and I design car suspension for my old car. It's like, I'm not that kind of like practical business minded. So it's really good to have someone like that. But I'm very aware that I want to keep in contact with people. Everyone's important.
Yeah,
you know, they really are. I mean, except for the guy who like leaves the like turd emoji on our, you know, on our Instagram.
Oh, you're gonna get a lot of that too.
Who I was like, yeah, and block. Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's not this isn't a YouTube comment page. Yeah. You know, it's a business. Yeah. So yeah. Yeah, I'm sure we'll get a lot of that. We've had like, we had a review, and people were like, "Oh, that pearl dial looks like dried cardboard that got left in the rain." It's like, thanks, guys. But
you're gonna find that as a new company, people don't really like change. People don't like new things. So you're gonna get a lot of hate that's just completely unjustified, and even a lot of the reasoning. Like, one story I always like to tell is. And I'm not going to give too many specifics away, because this guy's going to know exactly who he is. But we were doing a show once in the earlier days. We had just launched the Avalon, which has the fully CNC'd case, but it's the crown at 4 o'clock that just for whatever reason, people don't really like crowns at 4 o'clock. But you know, it's put there for a very functional reason. So this guy comes up to us, looks at our watch, kind of like standing back with his hands on his hips, just squinting his eyes a little bit. Looking at our collection, looks at the Avalon and points it. He's like, I hate 4 o'clock crowns, and walks away.
Yeah.
Walks around the rest of the room. And I wanted to see, like, what's this guy's deal? You know, it's just like why would you do that? Doesn't even say anything other than I hate 4 o'clock crowns. And on his wrist, he had an SKX, which is like the quintessential. Yeah. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Like, you don't even know what you're talking about. What's the point of doing this? Like, why are you here?
But it's, you can't take it personally. You got to focus on the people that really like what you're doing. And you can't take that shit personally, because it's like, every time I get a negative comment, I think that I like to imagine that the guy who's made that comment has got one of those like horrible oversized Alibaba chronographs that like don't have any functionality whatsoever. Yeah. Gold, you know, with a quartz movement. That's how I like to envision those people. And people are snobs as well, you know?
Yeah, but you know, I mean, you just mentioned you're an artist though.
Yeah.
Right. And as a musician, I went to Berkeley and I've been a guitar player my entire life. There's something to be said about when you put your heart and soul into something on a creative level, it's hard to take criticism. You know, it really is.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get easier. You get better, I think, at kind of controlling that impulse that you have to fight back and defend it with your life. But it doesn't make it easier to take that type of criticism.
I've been an actor for 16. I saw now on my LinkedIn that I've been an actor with my agent for 16 years now. And now I don't really give a shit anymore. But I know that feeling that like, was I good enough? Am I good? You know, why did people hate it? A friend of mine wrote this incredible play called Apple Face about two 40-year-olds who go to like a trance festival and meet this 24-year-old woman who may or may not be a serial killer. And it's an insane, like surreal comedy. And we had people making out in the theater, and it was a theater where you're like right up against the audience. And we had people knocking the drinks over. We had people sitting on our props before we came on stage. We had the second last show, we had a man with dementia who fell off his chair at the end. Oh, it was insane. But my whole mantra going into it, because I got bullied into doing the role because I hadn't done theater in like 10 years because I had such stage fright. My whole mantra was fuck the audience. Not in like, I don't like the audience, but this is my space and I'm going to do what I need to do. And I'm not going to think about what they think about me. And so I do get upset when people say negative stuff, obviously, but now I try to steer it towards the people who've reached out to me, who really like what we're doing. Yeah. It's difficult.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. That's really the way to do it.
But I got to say, I'm like so jealous that you're a musician. Like, I would give up everything to be a musician. Seriously, I love it. I mean,
It is pretty sweet. I can't say, I think I got into it because that was what, you know, in the movies, the guy that gets all the girls that can play guitar at the party.
Yeah,
you know, everyone playing the Sweet Child of Mine intro.
Yeah, exactly.
I quickly learned that that is not the case, and that all that shit that happens in movies is not true.
So, what kind of stuff do you play? What's like your favorite genre?
Well, I grew up playing the blues, and that's always kind of what I come back to.
Yeah,
like old school blues. Steve Ray Vaughan is my favorite guitar player of all time. But you know, I love Clapton. I love Hendrix. So that's kind of where I feel most comfortable. But you know, it's hard to live in 2020 and not pay attention to the more contemporary stuff. So, you know, like I'm a huge Dua Lipa fan.
Oh, I don't know them.
Dua Lipa, yeah, she's from London, I believe, originally Albanian, but she's one of the big pop stars now. I'm a huge fan of Miley Cyrus, even Justin Bieber.
A friend of mine acted with her.
I'm sorry?
A friend of mine acted with Miley Cyrus.
Yeah.
She came to Cape Town to shoot Black Mirror.
Oh, wow.
Which is, I don't know if you know Black Mirror.
I do, like I saw that episode.
Super intense show. Yeah, so her psychologist is a friend of mine, and he was like, dude, she's fucking so cool. She's just like down to earth and rad, and yeah, she was so, so good in that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, you know, South African actors, we have, because we have to do all the accents, you know, we have to be as good as the Americans or Brits who come over here. Sometimes they treat us a bit shitty. They kind of look down on us. so for him to say that was like amazing. I mean, I've had incredible experiences with overseas actors, and I've had really like shocking experiences.
So they film in South Africa with South Africans because it's more affordable. Is that the reason why they're over there?
I think it's I think you probably have to get a certain amount of South Africans in it. Maybe, I don't know, but it's you know, for example, I will audition for a lead role just so that they can see if we can match the lead. But I've worked with Ben Kingsley, and I've worked with Ray Winston and Travis Fimmel, who everybody knows as Ragnar from Vikings. I worked with him on Raised by Wolves, and they're just like, to me, they're just like people we get to like do scenes with and have fun with. There's no like star quality for me. It's just work.
Yeah. I remember
sometimes I really enjoy it.
I watched Red Sea Diving Resort with my mom, and I didn't even realize that you were in it. And when you sent me your highlight reel, a few months ago, I was like, wait a minute. I remember that scene. You were acting opposite of Captain America himself. Like you were in some pretty big productions.
Yeah. That was a really small role, but the weird thing was like I'd prepared like an Israeli accent. That's how I auditioned. And as is typical, the director like came to us and he was like, I fucking hate the Israeli accent. You got to do an American. I can't do his Israeli. He's Israeli, but he's lived in New York. So we were like, oh shit. Okay. How are we going to, do you want it American American or do you want it Israeli American? So he was like, oh, make it as Israeli American. So we just had to like figure it out and do it on the day, you know? And that's what I did.
Yeah.
I love it. I mean, it's really cool. You can't get, yeah. So it's nice working with different people, you know, and they look different in real life. You know, obviously it's, you know, Captain America is a very tall, very pale guy. He's, and he's really good and he's fucking cool. So
that's awesome, man.
Yeah. It's weird. I mean, I don't feel like it's interesting cause it's my life. I keep thinking, oh, I wish my life was more interesting, but, yeah, I enjoy it. You know, I love doing it. Yeah. It's very cool.
Yeah. It's like the whole, grass is always greener thing, right?
Always.
Like people just are naturally not happy with where they are, but that's kind of what makes humans so innovative and makes us always looking for more and gives us ambition and gives us reason to wake up tomorrow and do something even more special.
Exactly. I have a terrible fear of being, you know, a cog in the machine. You know, I've been a cog in the machine, so I'm very averse to it, which is why I'm making watches and being an actor. Yeah.
I can definitely tell you that doing the whole watch thing, you know, the freedom really is one of the best parts of this type of job. You know, being able to wake up whenever you want to and your day is purely dictated by yourself.
Yeah. And you push your own success.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, but that's the thing. Like, it comes with some not so cool aspects as well. Like the fact that if something doesn't work, who can you really blame but yourself?
You know?
And then you have the anxiety and the nerves that come with standing at the very front of your brand and you know, trying to make this thing a success. And if it doesn't, you know, that's a really shitty feeling too.
Yeah. And I know you guys have done the wind up and stuff. I would love to do that. You know, but I don't know why did you choose to become, you know, a brand owner, a founder, creator, you know, what was your inspiration to do that?
I feel like every time I'm asked that question, my answer changes a little bit. In the very beginning, when we came up with the idea of starting a company together, it was purely about me getting a chance to work with Cullen again, right? Because we were in a band together for many years when we were living together in middle and high school. And we hadn't seen each other for college. He went to California and I went to Boston to study music. And then those 4 years, the one thing that I always went back to in my mind was, fuck, like working with Cullen and being able to create, be creative, but also be professional and also have to think about the bigger picture and the feasibility of our ideas.
You learn from one another. That's what's so cool as well. You kind of you keep upping your game with one another. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We push each other to become better you know, things change a little bit because we, although we were always into watches, that was kind of the easy option for us, like the easy choice for us to get into a business. That was like, it was a no-brainer, you know, watches. That was really the only choice at the time. But it could have been anything. Like, we could have started another band. We could have started a brewing company. We could have, who knows? It could have been anything. The only thing that had to be part of that equation was me and Colin working together. But then as things went on, like, quickly after, like, we launched our first watch and then, you know, second watch, third watch, we started getting messages from people about what these watches are doing for them. And, you know, this podcast, I feel like this new energy in approaching the podcast as well, and the content on the blog and all that. And that all comes out of our customers sending us emails or DMs of exactly what I mentioned before, where they travel the world, or, you know, one of our early customers wore the watch to his dad's funeral. Another one wore it to their wedding. And creating these pieces of metal that can serve as vessels for very important memories, you know, and that to me is really what keeps me going now. You know, the fact that we're actually making people's lives a little bit better, a little bit more fun, or a little bit easier for whatever reason.
It's so weird because it's like, you know, as a designer or as an artist, you know, when I paint, it's a very different experience painting from being the artist to being the viewer of the painting, because you know what goes into it. So when I look at a watch, you know, your suspension of disbelief kind of dissipates after a while. You're like, hands, movement, dial, you know, bezel, crown, it becomes components. But it does, the cool thing is like, even though I still have a passion for designing and I have that kind of slight detachment from it, for people who buy the watch who aren't that, who aren't creating it, it serves as you know, a vessel for memories and experiences for them. I mean, the same as the gold Omega Seamaster that my dad bought when he left Australia in 1969, you know, which unfortunately was stolen from me. That meant something because he gave it to me, you know?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's acrylic and a dial and a movement and, you know, a body. But as a whole, it means something. You know, it has worth in that way. And that's what I love about it. Yeah.
And that's the type of value you can't really put a number on, you know, and that's what makes it so freaking interesting. You know, like, you see watches go for millions of dollars all the time, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars at auctions. Mm. And, you know, that's really cool in the sense that watches can be worth that much, even though the raw materials aren't even close.
Yeah.
But the reason why they go for so much is because of the story that comes with it.
Exactly.
You know, the memory that comes with it.
You're never going to get an Apple watch that sells like that for that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. At least not now, you know, maybe in a few hundred years when we have something that we uncover from underground, like a fossilized Apple watch or something, or fossilized fossil watch, who knows?
Yeah.
But, cool. So we're almost at an hour. I just want to give people an easy way to find you. And if there's anything that you want to steer people towards.
You can follow us on Instagram at Albany Watch Co. That's Albany Watch Co. And our Kickstarter is live. And you can click on us through either our Instagram or our website, albanywatches.com. So our Albany Watches is a landing page. You just click on the entire page. It'll take you straight through to the Kickstarter. Yeah. And I'm happy to answer any questions that anyone has.
Awesome. And everyone should go watch Raised by Wolves on HBO because you die in it in the first episode. It's really fun to watch. All right, man. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, dude. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the show. Go ahead and check out Albany's Kickstarter, and if you feel so compelled, back them and Brett for the awesome work that they do. This week's special thanks goes out to Ryan DeNicola. He is a member of the Watch Fam, head chef at a restaurant in downtown LA called Kispaka, and just an all-around awesome human being who comes from an awesome family. I think at this point we probably have every single one of their family members wearing a notice. I recently went to the restaurant he works at, and damn, they spoiled us. I mean, we ordered enough food for two, for myself and my girlfriend, and we got enough food for a family of four, at least. Felt great that the chef was also wearing a Contrail Laguna Sand while he was prepping our food. So thank you, Ryan, and also shout out to your brothers, Nate and Matt. Hope to hang out with you guys again soon. I just want to give a quick shout out to my friends over at Ruya Coffee, who just launched the beer that we discussed on a podcast a few episodes back. Don't forget, they offered up a discount code to the Notice fam. A number of you actually have already purchased some coffee with them, and the founder, Melis, who is on the show, sent me a couple of screenshots of emails that were sent to her by you guys. And I've got to say, it's really touching to see the amount of support you guys are offering up. As I've said 100 times before, and I'll say another 1,000 times again, we came for the watches, but we stayed for the people. So enter Nodus, that's N-O-D-U-S, at checkout on ruyacoffee.com. Again, we aren't making any money off of this. Really, they just had great coffee, some of the best chocolate I've ever had, and they're just fans of you guys, the watch community. Unfortunately, the beer is not for sale through the website, but if you are in Cincinnati, and I know a number of you are, head on over to Rheingeist Brewery to give it a try. See you on the next one.